Hello and welcome to this edition of the Talking Data Podcast. I'm Ed Burns from Search Business Analytics, joined by my usual partner, Jack Vaughn from Search Data Management. And today for the special edition, we also have our executive editor, Craig Stedman, joining us in the studio here. We're going to be taking a look back at some of the big trends that we saw in the world of data management from the year 2016. And we're gonna lead things off with cloud. It's kind of interesting. This is not necessarily, by any stretch, a new technology, but it seems to have had kind of a renewed presence in the data management world. So, Craig, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about what you saw as far as cloud impacting the world of data management this year?
Yeah, well, I think we're looking particularly at Hadoop and big data environments in the cloud, increasingly becoming a larger factor, or a larger, more deployments of Hadoop and big data systems in the cloud. It's been more of an on-premises thing in the past, but it's been really kind of picking up this year. And actually, Jack, I think Jack did a Q&A with Ovum analyst Tony Baer just recently, where he had some statistics, or at least general statistics on sort of cloud, on Hadoop in the cloud, workloads being deployed in the cloud.
Yes, this is not even hot off the press, because we're still in production on the story, but a veteran and someone I always like to get his perspective, that's Tony Baer from Ovum, and as we talked about cloud and Hadoop for an upcoming story, he said that his conversations with vendors, it seems a year ago it was 15% to 20% of new workloads are going to the cloud, but now at this point in time it's 1/3. He's expecting in 12 to 18 months that it'll hit a 50% mark. He called it an inflection point. And again, Hadoop in the cloud, people might be surprised, but it's still something that's a burning. But it's happening.
Yeah, and I think the interesting development along with that is that Amazon Web Services, AWS, is becoming kind of a big looming presence over the other Hadoop and big data vendors. Amazon offers its own Hadoop distribution on the AWS cloud. And according to, I was at a conference in July where Gartner analyst Merv Adrian was doing a presentation. He said that AWS had become the largest Hadoop vendor by a pretty wide margin, if you count the number of users, number of deployments. Maybe not from a revenue standpoint, but basically they were a bigger vendor than Gartner's previous research was a bigger Hadoop vendor than Gartner's previous research was showing. And I think it's the other Hadoop vendors are having to react to that, to try to compete with Amazon. So vendors like Cloudera and Hortonworks, some of the independent Hadoop vendors, made announcements during the course of the year to Cloudera, for example, to support transient clusters that you spin up, and you can spin up, run a job, and then shut them down. So you only use them when needed. There's Hadoop clusters in the cloud. And Hortonworks is also doing a similar announcement where they're running their Hadoop distribution on the AWS cloud and supporting that that kind of approach. But it's making it it's an interesting situation, because it's making it hard for or making it harder potentially for these vendors to make to make money, to be profitable, because they're having to react to Amazon's pricing model. It'll be something to watch going forward. What happens from a competitive standpoint with this. And AWS isn't standing still, right? Now Jack was not at the recent AWS reInvent 2016 conference, but they webcast a lot of it. So anyway, did reporting on that conference on things that AWS did from a data management and analytics standpoint, including enabling querying against S3 data stored in the S3 data stores in the cloud, something that Cloudera had also enabled as part of its announcements.
Yeah, well, a funny thing is that it wasn't that long ago that, those are just transient jobs. This would be the way people that were competing with Amazon on Redshift, their data warehouse, would say, you know, they just run them and they don't really exist. And it may turn out that, people don't mind if it only just lives one time and goes away, as in the expenses, too.
Yeah. Or in one case, one user from Choice Hotels, who I spoke with at the Strata and Hadoop World Conference in New York this fall, and they have one cluster that it's a development cluster that they gets turned on at 6 a.m. every morning, or Monday through Friday maybe, but gets turned on at 6 a.m. every morning and it gets shut down at 6 p.m. every evening, and they just, so that way, you know, they have a cluster for 12 hours and they don't have it for 12 hours, so they're paying, you know.
And that just could be another way that Amazon is redefining IT, the same way they did book selling. Certainly, as you mentioned, they're priced to move, and yet they have fairly complicated software that they offer, I mean, or sophisticated, maybe is what I mean, like, they came up with a version of the Presto SQL on Hadoop tool at the recent conference that you allude to, and it's called Athena, and it's not a SQL on Hadoop tool. It works on S3 data, and there again, people maybe don't necessarily need HDFS, and people like Cloudera and Hortonworks have moved to cover the S3 to be able to support analytics, Hadoop analytics on that too. So they may be doing something right. The thing that struck me about the conference was the approach to complexity Amazon took was to figure out how to scale things up and to make that easy for you, to have a big distributed system rather than having to figure it yourself. And supported open source software methods in a way. They're not a famous open source house. But just as I mentioned with Presto, if you use Amazon's Athena, which is Presto-like, you may be able to shift to another open source tool, there's not this tie-in with the vendor. These are things that just struck me about what Amazon is doing, and something that would be looking at going forward.
It's definitely an interesting development. It seems like in years past, people were maybe using Amazon to fill in some gaps, maybe. But now it seems like you just can't talk about big data in the cloud without immediately going to Amazon. But so, Craig, when you talk about these all these different vendors that are putting Hadoop into the cloud, Hadoop being something fairly complex in itself, and now all these different vendors have their own versions of it with different features, and then we add in all the new features rolled out by Amazon, this sounds like quite a lot for any enterprise to take on and figure out what they need and what's best for them. So when you're looking at this environment, do you see all this complexity impacting adoption in any way?
Yeah, there are a lot of big data technologies out there, not just Hadoop, but also the Spark Processing Engine and various other technologies and tools that have populating what's referred to as the Hadoop ecosystem or the big data ecosystem, variously. I don't know if the complexity itself is affecting adoption, but I think this year was kind of a funny year for Hadoop and big data technologies, I think, in general, or adoption of big data technologies. I think some people view Hadoop as not really living up to the hype or the expectations of where it was going to go by now. On the other hand, I think, we've seen particularly this year, I think a lot more what you would call mainstream organizations, banks or healthcare organizations, insurance companies, adopting Hadoop, deploying Hadoop and Spark and other big data systems and environment, and in some cases viewing it as something that's going to be an enterprise data, and it could be an enterprise data analytics, their new enterprise data analytics platform. And as that happens, we're talking about some pretty big companies and some pretty big architectures that they need to support the applications they want to run. So in that case, yes, then the complexity does come in, where you have all these different technologies, which is great on the one hand because you can do you have a lot of technologies to mix and match to meet your specific needs. But on the other hand, you have to kind of figure out which ones will do that, which ones to mix and match. So piecing them together can be really hard, both from the data management technologies to do the processing, and also is the analytics tools that you want to use to run your applications. It's not usually a one tool and done thing. You know, they usually involve a lot of different predictive analytics, machine learning tools, and statistical analysis tools. So that just raises a lot of issues with governing data governance across these different platforms, also just governing the usage of these platforms, and just managing clusters. So that all became a bigger issue during 2016.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, Jack, from your reporting, how does it look like organizations are taking on these complexity issues? Because, I mean, obviously, if they're bringing in all these different technologies, they're doing it for a reason. There is something good that they can do for them. But then, as Craig alluded to, there are some significant challenges that can come from keeping it all together and maintaining something cohesive. So how are enterprises taking on that challenge?
Well, I think that it may get darker and more complex before it gets simplified. But one of the technologies that comes out of the Amazons and the Facebooks and everything is containers and microservices. And we're just beginning to see it creep into the realm of data. And I know a story that I composed in a way along with Craig, though you had reporting credit but not a byline, but Rupert Steffner, who's a chief architect for Auto GmbH, he described that the only way you can connect all these components together successfully, and we're talking about Kafka and Spark and so forth, is to use microservices. Otherwise, he just said, is stupid. But that is a whole different architecture than the monolithic architecture that Hadoop came up with. So at every step of the way, there's one more thing that they have to add to the mix. However, it is interesting. And, of course, containers and microservices, it's early, as we often say, that if you do percentage, you find a few use it. But just for testing all these complex strings of, say, streaming data applications, the testing alone could slow things down terribly if you can't do it in a microservices format, and it doesn't require you to take down a whole system to test it. So this is coming under the name data ops. I think we'll have to decide next year whether that term has a life, because it's obviously just a variation on DevOps, and in which the developers are always involved in operations in a way. It's the easy way of putting it. This relates to serverless architectures coming back to the Amazon. They've been promoting that, and that was discussion. Again, these are ephemeral things that spring up and then spring down. Obviously, data persists, so that's where they're kind of working out the complexity. And Craig, I just telling people some of the fun we have in the office. I remember we spent a little bit of an afternoon trying to decide whether ephemeral or transient was the right term right. for these things. So just a little look behind the curtain.
Well, I think in some sense, at least from the perspective of us reporters, all this complexity is going to be a good thing because it's going to give us plenty to write about going into 2017. We'll have no shortage of activity. So that's good for us. But so thank you, Craig and Jack, for taking us through the reporting that you folks have done.
And thank you, Ed.
And thank you to our listeners as well for joining us on this edition of the Talking Data Podcast.